This is the Fenway Rundown, the premier podcast for all things Boston Red Sox.
You know, people harp on the last place thing, but essentially what's important is the record.
If the Red Sox want people to start thinking the ownership cares, then maybe they should talk.
This is the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live. Here are your hosts, Chris Cotillo and Sean McAdam.
Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to the Fenway Rundown podcast. Chris Cotillo here, Sean McAdam alongside Sean with his final day here in Massachusetts for now as he embarks on the West Coast for the opening day and opening series matchup between the Red Sox and the Mariners. Long flight ahead of you tomorrow, but we appreciate you taking the time in the middle of packing to do a Fenway Rundown. We'll talk about the roster because that has been the story of the week. News has trickled in. The Red Sox are close to a final product. You've heard it all first, Sean, on the Fenway Rundown Insider Text program.
That's correct, Chris. You can get all that information first. You can stay current on all Red Sox news. You can ask questions of us and get text responses. And you can supply questions for our next mailbag edition. And to do all of that, just text the word JOIN to 617-751-6257. And from there, click link, and you'll get a free 14-day trial period, after which you'll be charged $4.99 per month.
Very easy, and a good time to do it. Recommend doing it before opening day starts on Thursday. The big game Thursday night is Carolina versus Alabama, but the Red Sox also play in the Mariners at 10:10 Eastern. Sean and Smitty will be out there. They'll have that covered for you. I'll be manning the fort from here.
Somebody will hit will have a four home run game and you won't know it until the next morning.
No, I'll read it all on Mass Live in our Fenway Rundown Insider Text program. So roster decisions are pretty much done, as I mentioned. I think the most surprising one happened late last night. We talked about it as I called you and said, do you think this is actually happening? And we were both surprised by it. Brendan Bernardino optioned to AAA. Lefty reliever was really, really good for the Red Sox last year. Really good in spring training. I didn't envision a scenario in which he was not on the team, but that is the case. Still carry one lefty in Joely Rodriguez. You know, it's a surprise. I think in the grand scheme of things, we're going to look back. It's going to matter a little. He will be up. He will contribute. They're going to mix and match in the bullpen all year long. But, you know, we do these roster projections for months only to have them kind of we had Bernardino locked in at all times. And or at least I did when I was writing them. We've never considered him a candidate not to make it. But I guess there's always a surprise this time of year.
Yeah, and who knows what the, you know, there hasn't been a lot said about why the decision was made. And I'm sure that when Alex Cora and or Craig Breslow addresses this, it'll be, well, you know, Brennan's going to contribute. He'll be up before too long. We still see him as part of this team and a big part of our bullpen, on and on. But it is a little surprising. And when you look at the decision they made, it's sort of the reverse of the CJ Krohn, Bobby Dalbec situation, right? Mm-hmm. You had a couple of guys who had opt-out capability. In fact, both Krohn and Joely Rodriguez exercised their right to opt out. In one case, the Red Sox kind of ignored it and chose Dalbec while releasing Krohn, when they could have kept Krohn on the big league level, on the big league roster, and sent Dalbec, who has options remaining, to Worcester and keep control of both of them. They didn't in that case. They did here in adding Rodriguez and optioning Bernardino. And the funny thing is that Bernardino had an excellent spring. It wasn't like you could look at him this spring and say, well, last year was a mirage. He wasn't that good. Look at what happened this year. He had seven scoreless innings, so he didn't pitch his way off the roster. And it remains something of a mystery, other than maybe they're trying to send a message that this bullpen is a kind of moving target, that there will be additions, that there will be changes, that guys will come and go. That's something that Alex Cora stressed the need for last September. He wanted flexibility. The ironic thing is that by doing it as they did, you know, they can't just option Rodriguez down and flip him for Bernardino, but nonetheless, Bernardino will be up at some point and we expect will contribute.
Yeah, and I think, you know, once Joely was on the team, it just, which they, that came out, you know, either I think Sunday morning, you know, just these, the whole idea was that they would have two lefties in the bullpen. You know, I think that's something they were trying to do all offseason. Bernardino seemed like the lock, and let's see if they can add a second guy. They added Joely, they added Lettke, they had a couple of non-roster guys in the mix, and Benitez and Cam Boozer, who were impressive. I think Chris Murphy was in the mix before he got hurt last week. So I think everybody just assumed it would be two lefties, and now it is just a one. The other spot is going to go to Greg Weissert, it looks like, unless they make a really last-minute addition here in the last 48 hours. And so you're looking at now a really right-handed pitching staff, the five starters, and then seven of the eight relievers. They just need, you know, some of these guys to get lefties out. They think, you know, Campbell can do it. Obviously, they do have Joely on the team. Chris Martin was great against everybody. Jansen's going to have the ninth no matter what. But a very right-handed group, and a group that we're going to see, I think, fluctuate, you know, on both sides, really, throughout the whole time, whether it be, you know, Zach Kelly coming up or Criswell getting chances as a long reliever at some point, or on the left-handed side, the guys I mentioned, Brian Mata maybe factoring in later on. Hagenman had a good spring. You know, there's a lot of guys that you expect to be in this mix, you know, and as we've thought all along, if Jansen and Martin do get traded at the deadline, that'll just create more opportunities for guys. You know, injuries are going to happen. But like I said, this is not the eight-man group I would have projected.
No, certainly not. And I think if we were to look at, if you could point to any one person's inclusion in the opening day bullpen roster that led to the decision to not retain Bernardino to start, I would say it would be Isaiah Campbell, a guy who in about half a season last year with the Mariners, and he'll be facing his former team this weekend in the opening series. I'm sure that'll be interesting for him. But Campbell's a guy who has had a lot of success despite being a big righty power guy against lefty hitters. And so they must think that he can fill that role and get lefties out so that they didn't have to, at least to start, carry a second one.
Another addition to the bullpen, one that, you know, for some, I think came out of nowhere. I have a great, you know, story about actually tracking it down and breaking it. Looking at the guys who opted out on Saturday, thinking who would make sense for this Red Sox team? Chase Anderson. And so I sent a text, says, Chase Anderson a member of the Red Sox yet? And the answer was yes, because that was already done. And I think, you know, of all the guys that opted out between him, Julio Teheran, some of these other guys, he just made the most sense as a guy that, you know, could slot in. He is a guy who has not had good numbers the last few years. He's bounced around a lot, but he's a 10-year major league veteran. He stretched out to 50 pitches. He's going to be, you know, the mop-up guy or the long guy if there's a blowout early on. He's $1.25 million, which is a little more than I thought he'd get. But, you know, they needed somebody who could step in and make a spot start who's not Winkowski. And I think that's what they accomplished. It's not going to break the bank. They can DFA him in 2 months if it doesn't go great. But, you know, I don't see a lot of upside, but kind of just a functional signing and one on the margins that gives them and to fill a need, because, you know, this need we've talked about for innings, we've talked about it time and time again, just grew stronger after Giolito's injury, and especially after Chris Murphy's injury too, another loss. So he gives innings. Again, I don't know about upside, but just a move that, you know, we talked about the need for rotation depth, and they did it.
Yeah, and you might add Cooper Criswell into that equation too, a guy that we had sort of thought might start the year in the bullpen in that role, in a long relief role, where he could provide 3 1/3 or something like that if somebody gets knocked out early. Now that's going to go to Chase Anderson. With Criswell back in Worcester getting stretched out as a starter every 5 days, it's certainly easier to manage his workload in that environment than it is trying to find work for a multi-inning reliever at the big league level while you're trying to win games. So don't get too attached to these 26 guys, because I would say that there is a better than even chance that these are not the same 26, even for the home opener. In 10 days, a lot can happen, or in 10 games, a lot can happen. And I would expect that there would be some injury or performance issue that will change that group up at least somewhat, one or two guys, by the time the Red Sox come back to open the season.
Yeah, and with Anderson, I think you just have to look at, you know, Alex Cora has talked about, you know, not pushing the starters to go 7-8 innings early on. Not that, you know, these guys, some of the starters have never established that they can do that in their careers, but alas, not pushing them to their full workload early on, you know, maybe keeping them around 75, 80 pitches early on during the regular season. You know, everybody knows about that long West Coast trip, but the point of the schedule Alex Gore is concerned about after the off day when they come home from the West Coast, 13 games in 13 days, 10 straight at home, and then three in Pittsburgh, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think that's the 19th through the 21st before an off day, and then a three-game series in Cleveland. But those 13 and 13, I think it makes sense you'd see Chase Anderson start one of those games. Maybe Criswell starts one of those games. You know, they've talked about getting creative with the rotation. And, you know, it's a young rotation, so there's a lot, not a lot of wear and tear like an older rotation might have. We've seen that in the past with Sale and Kluber and some of these guys, Paxton. But, you know, some of these guys don't have the workload, so they're going to be careful early on. And that's why an addition like Anderson is functional, I think.
Yeah, you look at guys like Crawford and Houck and Whitlock, your 3, 4, 5 guys in your rotation. I don't know that any of those guys have pitched more than 105, 110 innings in a pro season, whether it be in the minor leagues or big leagues or combining them. So you're right. They're going to have to be mindful of workload. And that is especially true in the early going as you're still building up arm strength, still making that transition from the cooler weather to some places where they're going to go where it's warmer, like Anaheim at the end of this trip. So
not Seattle.
Not Seattle. Seattle will not be warm. I am packing like I'm going to the tundra because although people know that T-Mobile Park has a retractable roof, it does not have retractable sides. So in essence, that roof is kind of a big umbrella and the elements play in off the sides. It'll be a little chilly in Seattle for those first four and probably not all that much warmer in the Bay Area for the next three in Oakland, but we digress.
But not this many problem.
That's right. I'm only responsible for the first four. You know, they're going to have to get innings from a number of guys who haven't been pushed to that limit to this point in their career.
We have not touched on the decisions to put Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock in the rotation. I think, you know, viewing this from a few weeks ago, once Giolito went down, I think the guess was if they didn't make an outside addition, which it never seemed like they would, Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock were the guys that were going to be in the rotation. Cooper Criswell, friend of the show, Tar Heel. We had him on a couple weeks ago, and he definitely put himself in the mix. I think they actually considered him. I don't think they were at the beginning of camp, but he pitched so well that they did. You know, it's clear that they do value him, and they see him as a guy that could come up and help. That's why they put him in Worcester to keep him stretched out. And I think, you know, he will be on this team at some point. He's probably the first guy to come up if somebody gets injured. But Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock are in the rotation again. We've had this debate on the show since you joined in May. I've had this debate on the show with others for, I think, now three going on four seasons. You know, what's the best role for these guys? Alex Cora saying, you know, it's not if they're starters or relievers anymore. They're starters. We've decided that. And I'm like, you know, I don't really. I mean, you kind of had to, you know, at this point, you kind of forced into it. I think the whole world thinks Whitlock is better as a reliever. The stats are pretty stark in that way. Tanner Houck, I think, profiles even more as a reliever than Whitlock. I've been saying that for years. People forget about how good he was as the closer a couple years ago. And the rotation struggles when he was really given that job, separate of the facial injury. And obviously that's an unfortunate thing last year. You know, I think you wrote it well in that notebook a couple months ago that people didn't really talk enough about, you know, how little they got out of those guys last year when they asked a lot for them. And all of a sudden this year, you know, it's going to be different. I know that they're coming off healthy off seasons. I know there's a new pitching program in place, but it's still, to me, a huge ask to have both of those guys be really good major league starters, along with Bayo and Crawford taking that step, Pivetta being more consistent. What are your thoughts just on Whitlock making it in that role? Probably not a surprise after everything they've been through, but do you still view him as a reliever in a perfect world?
Well, I think it became apparent that both were going to make it as soon as Giolito went down because you didn't have, you know, the only other candidate really was Criswell, as you noted.
And Winkowski in name only.
Well, yeah, but not anybody that had had any success at the big league level as a starter. The Winkowski had a 5.5 ERA in 21 or 22 as a starter. So that was hardly a sure thing. And he didn't pitch particularly well this spring, as he acknowledged, which didn't help the case. So once Giolito went down, you're kind of thinking that it has to be Houken Whitlock by default. And I would disagree a little bit with you that they have to be really good major league starters. They have to be competent major league starters in the first half. They are, after all, 4 and 5 in this rotation. You set up Brian Bayo as your future number one front of the rotation
guy. They're also behind like a 2, a 3, and a 4. You know, like they're not behind a traditional 1, 2, and 3.
No, but this is the way the rotation is set up, and we have to read into that a little bit as their way of stating their preference. It's clear that that both Bayo and Nick Pivetta are 1 and 2 here, and that Crawford, although he hasn't gone deep enough in his time as a major league starter, might have a higher ceiling the other two. I've picked him as the guy that's going to break out a little bit, and I expect that that will happen to a degree. But what they have to get out of Houck and Whitlock are representative professional starts, major league starts. They don't have to be like the one that Whitlock gave them last night against the Texas Rangers in a very good Texas lineup, 6 innings and 1 run allowed. I mean, they would dearly love to get that every 5 days. What they've got to get is 5+ from these guys most times through. I think you had gone home by the time that Alex Cora had laid out this goal, but he talked a lot this spring about trying to get a minimum of 25 innings every turn through the rotation, preferably 30 innings every time through the rotation. In other words, somewhere between 5 and 6+ innings from his starters. He said, if you fall short of that 25, you're going to get in trouble because you're going to put too much of a burden on your bullpen. You're going to be getting into your bullpen and asking your relievers to come in the 3rd, 4th, 5th inning. You can only do that so long without it coming back to bite you. So I would say that if Houck and Whitlock can give them 15 outs every 5 days, if they're doing that, they're doing their jobs, and see if they can build on that.
If you have, you know, 3 sure things before them, then I think you can handle that as a team, but you don't. You know, I think there's still questions about Bayo. I have a lot of questions about Pivetta. I know he pitched well down the stretch last year, but your number 2 starter did get kicked out of the rotation less than a year ago. Crawford, I do think there's upside too, but it's not pitched deep enough in the game, doesn't have that track record. It's, again, another year with a lot of, you know, hopes and wishes, but not a lot of certainty. I think Giolito would have provided that, and obviously he's not on the team. Position player-wise, only a couple decisions to get to before we wrap here. I think Sadan Rafaela making the team. He probably would have, even if Rob Refsnyder was healthy. And once Rob Refsnyder went down, the roster was no longer an issue. Rafaela was really good in spring training. He'll be the everyday center fielder. You know, we were talking a little bit yesterday about upside and talent on this roster and things like that. He has, I think, as much as anybody. There are probably going to be growing pains. There's going to be some bad swings and misses. You know, I don't think, you know, too many growing pains on the defensive side. But on a team that, you know, lacks excitement or lacks, you know, maybe reasons to go to the ballpark or reasons to watch, I think he's a guy that really could be. And I think it's good for fans that he is the everyday center fielder. You're going to probably see some great plays in center, has some pop. And he, you know, they really hope he can form the part of the next core in an important position, and he's going to get a real chance here.
He's an athlete, which, you know, in recent years, they haven't had a lot of among their regular position players. They did not have good defense in center field. Duran last year profiled as below. Even Kike Hernandez, who had been an above average outfielder, did not play to that level when he played out there last year. So the fact that they have upgraded up the middle defensively, a healthy Trevor Story at short, in time, Vaughn Grissom will represent an upgrade over what they had at second, and certainly Rafaela is better than what they had in center last year. So that's reason enough to get excited. But yeah, I think Rafaela is going to be the guy that you want to see him play. You want to see him go get balls in the gap. You want to see him get on base and perhaps steal. This is a guy that, you know, averaged about 30 stolen bases a year the last 3 or 4 full seasons in the minor league. So he has that ability. I think it's smart of Alex Cora to not have him at the top of the lineup. That can put a lot of additional pressure on a guy who's got 20-something games under his belt at the big league level. Let him hit 6, 7, 8 down the bottom and get comfortable. But he provides you with a little bit of flash and excitement in the bottom half of the lineup, to say nothing of what he brings in the outfield defensively.
And again, that's something this team needs, because there's not a lot of it. You know, I think fans are excited about Casas and maybe Story, but Rafaela, a guy that I think fans are going to like if he performs and if he doesn't hit, and if he doesn't show that improved plate discipline once the lights go on Thursday, you know, it could be a problem for them and they might have to reassess. Last roster decision, you touched on it earlier. It's one that we've discussed a lot leading in. CJ Krohn against Bobby Dalbec. We both said on this show, which means that, you know, our knowledgeable cards are, I guess, revoked for good, that we thought CJ Krohn was going to make the team over Bobby Dalbec just because of the roster construction reasons you laid out. If you can keep Krohn and put Dalbec in AAA, you keep the depth, all that type of stuff. A very similar situation a couple years ago with Travis Shaw, Franchy Cordero, last year Raimel Tapia, Jaron Duran, but Craig Breslow, I guess, taking a stand here and saying Dahlbeck's the better player right now. We want him on the roster. Couple things here. Number one, maybe versatility won the day, and maybe CJ Krohn just looked that bad down in Fort Myers.
Yeah, I mean, I think he only got 11 at-bats. He got a late start. You broke the story of him coming in and getting a minor league deal. He needed a little time to get his feet underneath him, to get ready to be in games. By the time he got in there, there wasn't a lot of time left. He didn't look particularly sharp, as you might expect. A big, strong power hitter guy like that needs timing. He didn't have it, didn't have an extra base hit. So that, I think, coupled with the fact that, as you hinted at, Dalbec provides you with much more versatility. Krohn is essentially a first baseman and a right-handed bat off the bench, period. Really can't play anywhere else. Dalbec can play first, he can play third, and he could even, in a pinch, play a corner outfield spot here or there. My question is that a guy that on regular duty in the big league level has not been able to hit major league pitching consistently, what are the odds that he figures that out as a utility guy or a spare part off the bench? It's hard enough to be consistent at the big league level as a hitter when you haven't done it. It gets even harder still when you might get 4 or 5 at bats a week to keep that swing sharp, to keep the timing down. But for at least the start, he's getting that opportunity.
I just think it's striking that in a year that started with, and we've talked about this obviously ad nauseum and realize it to be the BS that it was, but in a year that starts with full throttle as the promise of the offseason, you go into a season with Bobby Dalbec on your team, Tanner Houck and Garrett Whitlock are in your rotation. There's just the upgrades were not there, and I think that's pretty striking.
Yeah, and I was thinking of this morning, Chris, and I don't know that you can say this about any of the other 29 franchises. The Red Sox, who line up on the third base side in Seattle Thursday night, will not have a single free agent addition on that roster. They only signed
Casey
2.
Casey Anderson.
Okay, who weren't signed. No, I guess he was signed to a major league deal. You're right. Sorry about that.
That's a big technicality.
Yeah, it is. It happened in the last few days. But they had only signed 2 major league free agents all winter. Lucas Giolito, obviously, being one. He's done for the season. And for now, Cooper Criswell is in Worcester. So until, thank you for correcting me, Chase
Anderson, Rodriguez.
No, I'm sincere, because I would have made that mistake. Mm-hmm. I didn't factor him in. And even then I was thinking, well, no, he got a minor league deal. And no, it was a major league deal right out of the gate. But he is the lone free agent addition to this team. And that's odd.
Yeah, I mean, the only, you know, the there's a lot of guys who never played for the Red Sox who will be on this team, but it's like Anderson, Campbell, Slayton, Weissert, O'Neill being the big one, which not what people, I think, expected a few months ago. We'll have one more very important episode. We're not going to tease the name just in case things fall through, but a big decision maker over there on Jersey Street will be joining us for our annual opening day episode. If you've subscribed to the show, paid attention before, you can figure out who that is. I will be asking when the All-Star game is coming to Fenway. If that's a hint, and we will announce the speaker, not the speaker, we'll announce the guest on the Fenway Rundown Insider Text program at some point today. How in the world would you find that out, Sean?
Well, what a great question to ask, Chris, because I happen to have the answer to that. Text the word join to 617-751-6257. Then click on the link to subscribe, which you can do in complimentary fashion for a 14-day period, after which you will be charged the entirely reasonable price of $4.99 per month.
This has been the Fenway Rundown, brought to you by Mass Live.